Hello and welcome to this live Scrappy AVM episode. We're going to be talking about how to generate $2 million in 2 years through an account-based podcast. Today, I'm joined by Joseph Lewin, who is our head of podcast strategy over here. Joseph, say hi to everybody real quick.
How's it going, everybody? Excited to have you here.
All right. We are going to go ahead and jump right in because there's a lot to cover. I want to be super clear. We're just going to try to give everything away. So as a side note, if you're like, oh, I would love more detail about that, feel free to shoot us a message on LinkedIn. We would love to just answer all your questions. So that's goal for today is ideally by the end of this, you've got everything you need to go get started. So that said, you may learn three things today. Well, what I have found is that most people, when they go to launch a podcast, they have roughly 75% of what they already need. So we're not going to share some kind of a secret sauce. I wish I had it. It'd make me way more rich and famous, but I don't think a secret sauce exists. Instead, there's just gonna be some step-by-step guidance on exactly what you can go to do today. So we can take this kind of amorphous idea of launching a podcast to make it super practical so you can get it done in the next 30 days. We're also just going to give you some simple playbooks so you can start to execute today. And then by the end of this, you'll leave with the foundation for a working podcast program. Does that sound good for everybody? If it does, go ahead and drop a yes in the comments. And we've already got Kyler here. Kyler, thank you for being here. You're going to show up here in just a second. So anyway, here's how to get the most out of this session. So first, write these three things down. What you want to be known for, what your customers care about, and who you serve. Those are the first three things you should write down. Second, if you've got a team, go ahead and message them in Slack or whatever you're operating within. There was a season of Scrappy ABM that operated out of a iMessage group text in the early days. So maybe that's where you are still. But go ahead and message the team that you've got and say, hey, I'm going to session on podcasting. What's one question you have about building a podcast? So go ahead and start sourcing some questions from your team. And the last thing is book 30 minutes for next week to go ahead and start putting some of this into action. I say this often, and I mean this very sincerely. You're going to spend about an hour with us today. If you do nothing with it, it was a complete waste of your time. So if you're not going to do anything differently, just go ahead and leave. Like I say that with love, but I want you to get a lot out of this. Information without implementation is useless. So you need to actually make this time useful by doing something with it. Cool? Cool. All right. Hi, by the way, I'm Mason. I'm first a husband, a father, and then a Christian. Love my family. If my wife starts screaming, she is like 38 and a half weeks pregnant. So we may actually end this early and go to the hospital. So anyway, who knows? It'll be a good time. This is my family. And then why most of you are here is because I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Scrappy ABM. I sourced about $20 million in tangible revenue in the past three-ish years. Our team has helped to source over $100 million since 2022. And then the thing I'm most excited about with podcasting, and this is where the title came from, is over the past 5 years, I've worked with four different agencies specifically over an 18-month time frame. And in that 18-month time frame, for all four different agencies, I've helped to create $2 million in annually recurring revenue. And that's where it came from. So $2 million in 2 years, that's not like a false promise. I've done it a few times. We're continuing to do it with our clients. So it is a very real thing if you commit the 2 years to doing it. So that said, I only have my experience, which is why I hire really brilliant, smart people. So that's Joseph.
Hey, thanks. Well, I'm also a husband and a father and a Christian. And outside of doing all this B2B stuff, I have a YouTube channel where I like burn things and make things out of logs and do fun stuff. So you could check that out also. But then, yeah, as far as podcasting, I started podcasting in 2021 and I'm the head of podcast strategy here at Scrappy ABM. In those 4 years, I've launched 38 podcasts. And the hosts I've worked with have done over $6 million in revenue directly attributable to their shows, not including any like brand lift or all the fun stuff marketers love and influence, but you know, actual tangible revenue that's tracked directly back to the show. And then I've generated over 100 million views on my personal social channels, doing more of that homestead content, that kind of stuff. So love playing in the content space, both podcasting and otherwise.
I love it. So yeah, a lot of what we're going to talk through today is very focused on tangible sourced revenue that's like not fluffy brand metrics. I want to be super clear. I love fluffy brand metrics. That's why I'm always ridiculously branded. But again, the way that I think about it is if you can validate the ROI through very easy to track things, you have no idea how impactful it is through all the things that we can't measure and track. So again, that's where I look is like sourced revenue directly easily attributable, knowing that there's actually a far greater impact that's harder to measure. So that said, couple questions for you to answer in the comments and then also go ahead and write down. I also want to give quick context from our streaming platform to when it gets to you. I think there's like a 20-second delay. So you're going to answer these questions now and then I'm going to come back to them later so that we can keep this rolling. So that said, first and most important question for you is how do you currently get customers? How do you know what your customers care about? This one is super important. When I launched Scrappy ABM, I thought it was going to be one kind of a business. And then after speaking with lots and lots and lots and lots of our customers, I was like, oh, you want something different from me. And I shifted the business. So how do you know what your customers care about? And the last thing is, how do you stay up to date on market trends? So go ahead and type those answers for yourself. Type in the comments where you want to type those out. How do you currently get customers? How do you know what your customers care about? And how do you stay up to date on market trends? So what are we talking about today? Very obviously, building a podcast is one of the most overlooked and high potential areas for most marketing agencies. It's become a joke of like, oh, there's so many podcasts out there. Google search for you. Google how many blogs are there, and then Google how many podcasts are there that are active. The numbers will surprise you. So there's some quick homework for you. Anyway, most marketing agencies are commoditized. So how most people, and again, that may offend you, and I'm sorry if it does, but like, that's what our buyers are thinking. So I like to just head that off at the pass and say, God, it's like, I'm just a vendor until I'm not a vendor and I'm viewed as a strategic partner. So if I know that, I should probably be a strategic partner on the front end. So again, most of the buyers that when we talk to marketing agencies, this is how they're getting their customers. They Googled like blank services. So it's like ABM agency. They asked a friend and their friend was like, well, I used this person and they didn't screw me over. So like, I should probably use them too. Or they had like an agency that they used one time. And they just kind of like keep bringing that same agency to their next organization. So again, they've kind of like, they just found the one agency they like. And I want to be super clear. That's amazing. I love when our customers do that. But also like, this is how most of our buyers buy. If there's something else that I missed as like the standard ways that people buy marketing agencies, go ahead and also drop that in the comments. But again, as I have thought through it, talked a lot to agencies, these are the three standard ways. It's like referrals. It's you get in good with one person and they build your agency off the back of like 10 customers that just keep moving to different organizations, where you get lucky and the Google gods served you up. So if that's the case, again, unless it's that last option of like you build your back on 10 customers or you build your business on the back of 10 customers, if you're just served up through Google or you're served up through referrals, this often means if you're viewed as a commodity, like pricing is just a race to the bottom. So the biggest question they ask is not what value can you provide, but how cheaply can you do it?
One thing to add in real quick is all of those traditional ways that agencies get business are also, you're not in control. And so you're just hoping that a lead comes in. And so that's where you get a lot of that feast or famine, is you don't really have any control of the growth of your business other than to just go to previous clients and ask them for more work or ask them for referrals, and that you can only do that so many times.
Preach it. Yeah, I like to be in control of my life. So if all I have to do is wait for people, that sounds really exhausting and not a sustainable way to build a business. But to your point, some people will lean into outbound. And what I have found is that outbound, if it's just, hey, come buy my services, is largely ignored. It's a joke at this point. Like, I actually make this same joke in every sales pitch, which is, who's got an outbound email today that says I can get you an extra 15 to 20 opportunities a week? We've all gotten that same email. So again, most marketing agencies in outbound, that's pure cold outbound, gets ignored. And again, if we're going only through paid media programs where you can target, ads continue to increase. So you've not built a relationship or a brand. And as a result, it consistently eats at your margins. So that's kind of the reality. And again, here's what I find to be the worst thing of all time is like, you're losing to worse people because they just don't, like, people don't know you exist. And then again, to Joseph's point earlier, referrals, if you're just waiting for referrals all the time, that's not going to be super scalable long term. I'm going to be super clear. It's a great way to get the business started. It's a great way to get customers in the door. They're always going to close at a higher rate. The challenge is that they're often not predictable. And we've already got some great comments here. So again, Nathaniel is saying that he's getting his customers through LinkedIn and some outbound email. But sorry, Nathaniel, I'm going to out you, and I appreciate this. Of like 85% of his current revenue comes from former employers. So he left organizations, went to somewhere else, and 85% is coming from people that he's already worked with. So that trust is already there. So it's easier to sell into those places. Daniel has heard outbound also works. And like, I want to be super clear. It can, but as I talk with most marketing agencies, they're really struggling with just pure outbound. So Daniel, if you've got additional context on what they're doing from an outbound perspective, I'm sure the whole audience would like to hear it. And then, yeah, John, I couldn't agree more. Like, you need some balance of inbound and outbound to grow the business. And Kyler is saying, yes, we felt all of this. So All right, I know we're barking up the right tree. So that said, here's why I'm confident podcasting works. So this is my personal stats. So I've been doing podcasting for 4 years, 300 plus episodes, 32,000 followers gained, 50 plus speaking engagements, 8 million in pipeline directly from podcast guests, which has closed 3.5 million in revenue. And then in just the past 2 years, it's 2 million in sales. As recent as like last week, we kicked off a client for $170,000 on a 12-month commitment. SAP Marketing was a guest. She was like, we need help with this. She came in literally 4 weeks after we recorded the episode, and they closed within 3 weeks. So from episode recording to closed one, 7 week time frame. It happens to us a couple times a quarter. So that's why I'm confident a podcast works. And again, I'm actually not alone. These are three shows that we've run that have all generated lots of revenue. So like Jay Schwedelson has generated $4 million in 2 years. We've generated $2 million in 2 years. And then Daniel Disney has generated $1.5 in 1 year. And I know you're probably thinking, if you go and Google these people, Jay's got a social following of 60,000 people. I've got 23,000 people. So you can ignore the fact that I just said I had zero like 4 years ago. And you can ignore that. Totally fine. Dan Disney, combined following of 1.1 million people. So you're like, got it. Like, this only works for people that have a huge following. Not necessarily. Kyler, who's actually here. Kyler, he launched a podcast with us. And then after Kyler, you can tell us the truth. Like 3-4 months of going outbound, doing direct mail, getting zero meetings. Within the first like 90 minutes of you doing outbound for a podcast, you got two guests booked. And it gets better. sorry, Kyler, we're talking about you a lot today. So Kyler, again, you can go look him up. He's like right here today. He's breaking into a new industry. So within 4 weeks of doing podcast outbound, he got 21 guests recorded. The first opportunity in 4 weeks. Oh, actually better. A second opportunity in 4 weeks. Potential customer re-engagement and an in-office visit. If you ask for the slides, this email very directly says, I would have not gotten the opportunity to go in person had it not been for a podcast. Pretty cool. Additionally, that person I just referenced, this is not just pipeline. Like, this is the person I just said kicked off last week for $170,000 for a year. Said, hey, I appreciate having you on the podcast. I've got a couple companies and friends that could use your services. I will make those introductions when I get back. And she did. And she closed. So, like, this works. This is our actual revenue scaling from zero to 200K in MRR in like 18 months. Yeah, Kyler, like, this was not planned. I did not know that Kyler was going to be here, but like literally just said 29 guests in less than 4 weeks that are all ICP. Pretty cool. Thank you, Kyler, for being an unintentional plant. So again, it works if you put in the work, and it's not super overly complicated. Like when you spend 30 minutes doing a prep call with somebody and then an on a recording with them, you now spend an hour and a half developing a relationship with direct decision makers. Like you go from a commodity vendor to a strategic partner with a perspective. Like that's, I think, the most important component for agencies is they need a perspective. There's lots of people that do Google ads. What's your perspective on how to do Google ads effectively? If you never actually develop the relationship and share that strategic perspective, you're just going to be a commodity. This is so important. I've talked with agency owners who've been running a business for freaking a decade and they can't scale past $60,000, $70,000 a month. And it's because they're a commodity vendor that's saying the exact same thing as everyone else. When you build a podcast and you develop relationships through a show, you actually have a perspective that people hear and they resonate with, and you have guaranteed delivery to your exact decision maker because they're on the freaking show. Sorry, I get really pumped out about this, because if you do this well, this will change your life. Joseph and I both have built podcasts by ourselves. So everything we're about to walk you through, and John, your question, we'll answer it here in just a moment. You can do all this on your own. It'll change your life. It just takes 2 years, I promise. So the other thing is you're going to become smarter and understand your customers better because you're going to spend a lot of time with them. So your marketing becomes clearer, your sales conversations become clear. And again, podcasting is branding, it's content creation, it's market research, and it's pipeline generation. For busy agency owners, this checks a ton of boxes. So let's talk about why it would fail, because you're like, this sounds amazing. I want to go. 80% of shows fail. It's not 80. It's 90% of shows fail. That was my bad. Got my metrics mixed up. But regardless, first thing is unclear goals and measurement for success. So if you open up a podcast platform and you see downloads, you're going to think, oh, the more downloads equals better show. And the approach that we take requires zero listeners to still be successful. You'll get some, but like we measure success separate from listenership, which makes zero sense for a lot of people. That's the first thing. Second thing, lack of consistency. 90% of shows never get past episode 3. So even when you go and Google blogs versus podcasts, specifically designate how many active shows are there. It's not a lot. Joseph, can you Google that for us right now to get us the most up to date? Like, how many active podcasts are there? So again, lack of consistency. A lot of people start a show, they don't continue the show. And then the last thing, while Joseph is looking that up, is poor promotional strategy. So again, you're doing a lot of stuff. Like, make sure you actually get in front of people. Podcasts are terrible for discoverability in platform. So you've typically got to promote somewhere else to get people to your show. So that said, Joseph, do we have the stat on the number of active shows today?
It's like 400 to 500,000, but that's across like everything.
Everything globally. If you Google how many blogs are there, it's 600 million. So again, you're like, oh, I should do blog content instead. Well, you have a better shot with a podcast. So that's why podcasts fail. So the philosophy over here at Scrappy ABM is, if we know why something fails and we can directly address it, we then will be successful by default. So the rest of this presentation can be directly focused on, like, how do we address these three things? So first, we're going to talk about measurement for success. Ask for the slides afterwards. There's a lot of content here. I'm not going to read all of this, but like, this is a full breakdown on each of the three different kinds of shows, which is the content engine, the account-based podcast, and the public figure podcast. I'm going to break each one of these down really quickly. Content engine. The main goal here is you want content. So again, we're trying to get content that we can then repurpose out of every episode. If you think about how any content is created from you and your agency, I can guarantee somebody sat you down, they asked you a bunch of questions, and a piece of blog content or social content. All we're doing with the podcast is recording it and then also uploading it to Apple and Spotify. So then out of that, you can create multiple social posts, you can create blog content, you can create email newsletters. As a side note, I'm going to out myself for a second. If you follow Scrappy ABM for any length of time, we produce like lots of content. We actually publish upwards of 30 to 40 content assets on a weekly basis. In case you're wondering, our team is me and a fractional marketing director who's also here named Evan Cox. I record podcast content, and then our podcast team that works in-house as well repurposes all of that. And then Evan repurposes it for distribution purposes. So like, he writes our newsletters, he's helping coordinate social content. I have not created content in the past year separate from podcast content or like webinar content. Those are the two things I do. Is I make my own slides and my decks and I record podcasts. Everything you see that's written form content is a derivative of something I have spoken somewhere else. It's like super helpful for scale. Second is post-production here is critical. So you want super well-organized post-production, so you've got quality and quantity assets for distribution. And then the success metric here is reach. So this is mainly focused on increasing brand awareness, your content reach, and then increasing inbound pipeline. So again, we want just an ever-increasing audience. Thought process here, if I reach a million people and help a million people, I only need 1% to close to have a healthy, thriving business. So it's helping in scale more so than depth. Drop in the chat if that all makes sense. We're going to keep rolling into the next one. Admittedly, our favorite. You want meetings. You want to talk to people. So like, the goal here is to get best fit customers to actually come on your show so you can develop a relationship with them. And I am very intentional with this. This is not a connect and pitch type situation. This is a relationship development approach. And if you actually do super well with what you offer and you have a unique perspective, what we have found is that out of my show, results may vary. So hear that caveat. 40% of people that come on our show turn into pipeline within trailing 90 days, whether through referrals or through entering themselves. We've seen some guests or some of our shows that we run are like 10%, some are 20, but again, results vary. At the end of the day, if you have a unique perspective and these people actually need your help and you've done a great job on clarifying who you go after, which, John, we're going to come back to your question here in a second on how to do that. You want meetings? This works. Next, follow-up is critical. So like, the main thing here is that you've got to have a really well-established follow-up process to actually convert these guests into pipeline. And then the last thing is, success here is pipeline. Based on the number of guests that we interview, how many of those actually book a meeting with our team? That's the goal. And again, I look at it through the lens of a 90-day window, but I've actually had guests that have come back 3 years later. So like, the longer you build relationships, the more relationships you've got that may inevitably turn into pipeline for you. So that's how we think about the account-based podcast. Joseph, I want to, before I move on to admittedly the hardest, any thoughts or questions that you've got or want to answer on this one specifically?
Yeah, I mean, the account-based podcast is where we recommend most of our clients go, which we're going to get into that. But the main thing is really flipping the way that you think about this from going, hey, I'm trying to get views, get clicks to get inbound, to, hey, I get to just get in front of exactly the right person who's sitting across the table from me, and I get to have a conversation with them. And so the biggest holdup that I see for people is that they're focusing so much on the content part of it, especially as marketers, that they forget that what you're trying to get out of content at the end of the day is a conversation with the right person. And so if you're just talking to the right person at the very beginning, you're already getting the value before the content ever goes out. And I think that's how I would answer your questions that you just put up, Nathaniel, about editing a podcast. How do you balance quality of the content? And to me, it's just at the beginning, really focus on the guest relationship over the quality. And you don't want to put something out that's going to be junk. Have a nice mic. Do your best to have a good quality recording, but really focus on how do I get the right people on the show and how do I build a great relationship with them? Because that's where you're actually going to drive revenue for your business, is from that. And then the inbound is gravy.
I love it. Danny, you asked a good question, which is, what's a good platform to do a podcast on? There's lots of different components to the tech stack, so we'll save that for the end. But if you want to get more specific on the kinds of technologies you're looking for, I want to make sure we answer that question directly at the end. So that said, talk about the public figure podcast. This one is admittedly the hardest. Like, people are like, I want to be Joe Rogan. I'm like, that's insane. Joe Rogan built a career for like 15, 20 years before he launched his podcast. So like, pretty hard. But the goal here is influence. So you want reach, relevance, and raving fans. You have an existing audience. So this is not starting from scratch, but like, this is, you're already known in some places and spaces, and you want to create audience depth. Last thing is that success is rankings. Like, you're super high in the charts based on the chartable charts that exist. They used to be, or you've also, sorry, I'm going to date myself for a second, but there's lots of old platforms. Chartable went away. We're now looking at new ones, but Apple podcast charts are kind of the main thing here. So quick examples. Jay Schwedelson is a public figure podcast. So like, he's in the top 5% of globally ranked shows. He consistently ranks in the top 3 of US-based marketing podcasts. Like, his goal is public figure. I run an account-based podcast. My main goal is like meetings and revenue. And then Daniel Disney, he ran a content engine. So what we'd actually do with Daniel is we'd sit down with him for like 3 hours. He'd crank out 12 episodes as a solo content in 3 hours. And then he had 3 months of content done in 3 hours. That was his main goal, was just reach and amplification and repurposing. So again, all of these are shows are examples of the different kinds of podcasts that you can run. So next question, what should you do? I already talked about this, but like 80% of you should likely run an account-based podcast, because for most agency owners that I speak with, they're trying to figure out how to predictably get meetings. If you're not going to do this, it's probably going to be the content engine. Because again, unless you've already got like a huge public-facing brand, a public figure podcast is just really hard to pull off. Now, inevitably, you do a great content engine that can transition into a public figure podcast. But as a starting point, 80% of you should do the account-based podcast. 17.5% of you should do the content engine. And then lastly, 2.5% of you should do public figure podcast. All right. So here's why I love account-based podcast. It's designed to secure conversations with your best customers. That's it. Like, every engineer I talk to, this is what they're looking for. That's what account-based podcast does. Again, it does help you create content. I'll tell you why this is important here in a second, but like, scalable content strategy is how you inevitably amplify your brand. So like, it's still important, but it's not the main goal. You win without any listeners, which is super important as well, because it's really hard to measure success on a podcast. The last thing here is, you're seen as an expert. All of you here have a deeper sense of trust because we're doing this live, and it's very clear I'm a human being. In an age of AI, like, podcasting has yet to be overtaken by AI, whereas written content has. So when you can actually be on camera, use your tone and your voice and develop a relationship, it helps to position you as an expert. As far as the highly scalable content strategy, the other like awesome move is, you send all the assets to your target account or the best fit customer that you would like to work with, and then they post it on their socials, and then you've put your face next to the face of the department's boss that you're trying to sell into. So they already are like, oh, like, they sent in Lorena, which, side note, Lorena is a real person we just closed last week. They're already friends. So like, internally, we are viewed as a safe vendor because of the relationships we've already developed with their leadership. Pretty cool. When you have them posting about you on their social channels. So like, that's why the content side of it is super helpful. All right. So now I'm going to pass it to Joseph, because you listened to me for like 27 minutes nonstop. And Joseph's going to walk you through exactly how we launch shows for our clients.
Let's go. Yeah. And I think another way to think about this that's going to help frame the next part of our conversation is, if you're speaking on huge stages, like Inbound, public figure podcast probably makes sense, right? If you're doing tons of money in revenue and you just have the extra money to put into brand and you've got enough coming in, great. The public figure or the content engine can make sense. And then the content engine, that kind of makes sense when you've got a good amount of revenue, you're growing brand over time, maybe you're not on main stages yet, you'd like to be, then the content engine helps you really get your ideas out there. But you have to actually have very clear ideas that people are already buying into, you're already getting traction on, and very clear things that you're selling that people can buy from you without a sales call. So if you're not really at that point, then you probably want to just close revenue in the next 90 to 180 days. And if that's you, listen up. This is what this account-based podcast process is for. And then we have a 30-day launch program here at Scrappy ABN. And the reason is I've seen an inverse relationship between how long it takes somebody to launch a show and the success that they actually have in driving revenue. And so people get caught up on all the things that you would focus on if you're creating an influence generating podcast. If you're going for that high-end podcast, that's when you want to get really crazy about doing a ton of upfront research, really nailing your show name and having a unique show premise and doing a ton of launch promotion and all that. That'll make sense if you're going to dump 250 grand into your podcast over the next year. But if you're not looking to do that, then the faster you launch, the sooner you're going to have conversations with the right people. And that's why we get really aggressive about launching. And so if you're watching this, this is our call to you to launch in the next 30 days. So the way we do this with our clients is month one, we have a kickoff call. We call that day zero. And that's where we're really aligning on the podcast goals, the audience and company positioning. And then we're digging into the 30-day plan of what we're going to do to make this happen, aligning on expectations for that 30 days, but also what to expect over the next 90 to 180 days of launching your show, really aligning on that. And then we set a launch day. And then from there, we book the next 4 weeks worth of meetings. So we make sure we stay on track to get this done. So here's where I'm going to make this as practical as possible for those of you who aren't looking to work with us. I'm going to share with you what we do and then give you a couple tidbits on how you could think through these things.
If I may add to it, if you hang out to the end, we're actually going to give you our exact onboarding checklist for how do you get a show launched. So side note, if you hang out to the end, you'll actually get our exact checklist.
Yeah, and that's going to answer some of these more specific questions that you guys have. So meeting one, we're focusing on goals and ICP, your ideal customer profile. And so we're really digging in at that point. We kind of covered it from a high level in the kickoff meeting, but now we're going, okay, if you were to make a list of the 50 people in your industry that if you knew them, it would change your life and change your business, they'd be amazing people to know that could really help either work with you or help introduce you to the right people in the industry. Who are they? Let's make a list of those people. And there's a little bit more sophistication that goes into that where we're building sales navigator lists. And then depending on the situation, we might be digging into your CRM data to really figure out who are the most profitable clients for you now and how do we find more people like that. And then we're going to define really specific goals. What is it that we're looking to do, both the number of shows that we want to produce, the number of guests that you want to record, and then the revenue goals for the show over the next 3-6 months. So we're going to nail that meeting one. Meeting two, we're really digging into the show name and show premise. Now, we spend a lot of time on this in the process. And so the short and sweet of it is your show name needs to be something that when you invite somebody to come on your show that's in your ICP list, they're going to go, oh, I want to go on that show. And if your show name repels them from wanting to come on because it's way too close to what you do, but isn't something that they're going to want to talk about, you're going to have a much harder time booking guests. So just make sure when you're doing a show name that you're creating something that both connects with the person you're reaching out to and is going to position you the way that you want to in the industry. And then show premise, a lot of times this is really just focused on interviewing your guests and making sure that the way we align this is making them look good while still bringing in your expertise. Then week two, what we do with our clients is we actually record episode one as a LinkedIn Live that then we take and turn into the first podcast episode. And we focus that on market pain points and the challenges your audience is facing in the industry. And then we have meeting three, which is friendly guest outreach and promotion strategy for the launch. Again, I'm not going to go super far into this, but your best 10 to 20 first guests are typically people who you already know. Yes, you can go for that ICP list of people you wish you knew, but if you focus on who are people who you've talked to before who are interested and they fizzled out, or people who are already in your pipeline and something needs to move forward, but you don't have a good reason to reach out, invite them on your show. or people who you've worked with in the past, previous colleagues who could bring you into their organization. Those are all great people to have on for your first 10 to 20 guests. And then, yeah, we're going to build out the promotion strategy, which we're going to talk about here in a second. And then week three, we do episode two, which we focus on your unique value as a company and what sets your brand apart. And then meeting four, we're going into question set development. Now, I'll give you just a little tidbit here. I see people really struggle with this because they try to create way too many questions and spend way too long on research. When I'm doing a show, I'm spending no more than 10 or 15 minutes researching if I'm not having a pre-interview with them. And then I'm maxing out at 3 to 5 questions. And then really where the magic is in your follow-up questions and really connecting with that person on what they said. And so if you have 10 or 20 questions, you're going to only confuse yourself and it's going to be much more difficult to actually manage that interview effectively. So I like having a question set that you repeat over and over again. And you just shift it a little bit based on the guest so that you're not having to spend a lot of time focusing on your questions. You're spending your time really engaging with the guest. And then finally, week four, we're recording episode 3, which is your top frequently asked questions that you get during the sales process and covering the objections that you typically run into. And then meeting five, we're digging into guest outreach strategy and automation and pulling all of that together. And so when we crunch all of this into 4 weeks, when normally it's spread out over 3 months, we're able to get the show rolling, already have guests booked, have the first 3 or 4 interviews recorded before the show actually goes live. And that way, within that first 3 days, we're actually launching. And just to give some perspective on this, we've launched 3 shows since June, and all 3 of them have launched within 30 days of our kickoff meeting. So, you can.
2 things I want to add really quick. 1, Joseph touched on it lightly, but like when we talk about friendlies, don't overlook the pipeline and your closed lost opportunities or people you met at events that never ended up actually following through on the meeting. Like when we talk about friendlies, that does not actually have to be like, these can still be ICP fit people that are just easier to get. And then the other thing is we talked that 90% of shows fail because they don't get past the first 3 episodes. With this process, you'll have your first 3 episodes done in your first 4 weeks. And as a result, you've already overcome one of the greatest challenges, which is consistency. John had some really great questions just around like keeping the funnel filled with qualified ICP guests, the hard part. Yes, and Joseph, you can speak to this better than I can. So I'll just start and you can add anything to it. But one of the things that we've seen as a challenge is people just don't have enough episodes out on the front end. So people go check out your show and they're like, oh, they've got like an episode. So that's why the friendlies list is so important to get the show to like 10 to 20 episodes. Because once you're at that kind of, like once you hit the tens, for whatever reason, people view the show as more of a real show versus just like a quick play. So again, I hear what you're saying. Once you've gotten the show rolling, we have actually not seen that as an issue. Again, it's 10 to 20 guests that are easy gets. And then after that, you can go far colder from an audience perspective. So hopefully that helps, John.
Mason, I have a couple of super practical things and we won't spend too long on this because otherwise we won't get through the rest. But a couple ways to book guests. I mean, I use LinkedIn an insane amount for this. So first thing is I go, who's viewed my profile? That's the easiest way to get people to book my show. So every day I look in there, if I see somebody I think would be a good fit, I just immediately reach out and go, hey, I'd love to have you on my show. And then a good portion of them, I'd say 60, 70% say yes. And so if they came to my profile, great, a great list. Then I go to comments on especially content around the podcast, people who engaged with me at all on LinkedIn, people who engage with my guests' posts about the podcast. Those are all going to be the easiest way to book new people. But even if you're going cold, people say yes. If you make it about them and your pitch isn't, hey, come talk to me about what I do. Instead, your pitch is, hey, I want to make you look awesome and make you look good. You almost could say it that way, but a couple slight tweaks, then people say yes. And so for me right now, I spend about 45 minutes on outreach a week to book 3 to 5 podcast guests in that amount of time. So once you get rolling, it really isn't that bad. So these are some of the deliverables that we have for clients and some of the things you're going to want to make sure that you have before you actually launch. So during that first 4 weeks, we're setting up the podcast platform. So definitely want to make sure you do that. Publishing the trailer episode. One more pro tip is that you can't set up the distribution to Apple until you've published an episode. So I usually do a soft launch where we launch the trailer a couple days early before we do a big promo. So that way we make sure it actually shows up on Apple. And then we have the first 4 episodes recorded and edited. We have the show name, description, premise, and all of that finalized. Basic branding and graphics, launch plan, and then have that promotional strategy all built out. So that's what we do for clients, but definitely recommend having all of this done before you actually launch so that you're not getting behind.
Love it. And then Daniel, to your question earlier on like platforms for hosting, we've used Buzzsprout, Spreaker, Captivate, Castit. Like we've used a bunch of them. What I would say for us at this time is we're mainly on Captivate. But again, if I were running a single show, I'd probably still use Buzzsprout because it's the least expensive and you're charged based on hours of uploads per month. Joseph, anything that you would add on to that from a hosting perspective?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Just there's a ton of them out there. They're all very similar. We use Captivate. That's what I've been using for a while and I like it, but I wouldn't get too crazy with it from there. And then we record on StreamYard, like what we're doing right now.
Cool. All right. So again, kickoff requirements for people to start thinking through.
Yeah. So I'm going to buzz through these just for the sake of time, but we're really looking when we're launching a show to learn about the company overview, goals, target audience, ideal customer profile, what kind of tone you want for the podcast, sales insights, how you want to repurpose the content, and then what your current marketing team looks like. And then we're going to take all of that. And that's a lot of what we discuss in that kickoff call to make sure that we're setting up the show right. But these are all things you really want to think through. In the resource with the checklist, we also have a link to the podcast strategy document where you can go through and fill a lot of this stuff out on your own that we would normally work with you on. And that's going to help you get a lot of this info set.
I love it. So let's talk about how to promote the show.
Sweet. One more thing, Mason, that we didn't cover that I think I'll just throw out there is nobody asks about editing, but a lot of times we recommend editing in Descript, especially if you're not a huge editor yourself already. I would definitely recommend editing in Descript. And then this isn't just as a self-promotion here. Like unless you have a ton of extra time, editing a show on your own is very difficult to do. It's very easy to get bogged down. I did it for a couple of years and it's hard. I burnt out eventually and my podcast stopped for a while just because it's hard to keep that going. So whether you work with us or you work with somebody else, I would really recommend trying to outsource that as soon as you can, because that's the main reason I see people stop.
I was just going to say, the other tip that you actually helped me learn is if you do live streaming, typically the editing's a lot easier because guests are on. So there's not as many mistakes that people make. So like this is live. We'll have a couple edits here, but like honestly, our editing team will get this cranked out in like 2 hours versus sitting down with it for 4, 5, 6 hours. So again, if you're really worried about the editing front, live streaming is super helpful for that.
Yeah, live stream or the other thing I've seen people do is just have ultra short episodes. Like our colleague Jim has always had very short sub 10 minute episodes, and that's helped him be more consistent with it. Although I like to talk, so I really struggle to keep the episodes. Okay, so pre-launch promotion. It's helpful to have a show announcement graphic. It's not required, but you know, just say, hey, we're kicking off a new show. That's always a good one to have. Posting the podcast trailer itself. Usually we try to keep those between a minute and 2 minutes. And so those are a great clip just to post across socials and say, hey, we're launching a show. Here's what it's about. Then definitely always do an email blast. And we would recommend kicking off a LinkedIn newsletter as well. And we're going to dig through each one of these things here in a second. Or I guess the ongoing show promotion is where we're going to dig in. So I'm not going to read through these, but it's LinkedIn posts, newsletter, grassroots promo, and paid promo. And those are going to be the primary ways to do it. So we'll go through each of these. If you don't have a ton of time, this is where I would recommend staying. This is where most of the promotion that I've done, this is where I do most of the promotion for my own stuff. And the value of this is that where your audience is, they're on LinkedIn, right? For most of us. And they're going to see this content and your guest is going to see it. And then you're going to get engagement. And that makes it easier to invite more people on the show because you just look through the comments, you look through the engagement and you find great fit people for your show. So if you only are going to do one thing, I would highly recommend posting clips, maybe 2 to 3 a week from your show.
Yeah.
The next thing is graphic posts. I don't do this as much. And I would really only recommend doing this if you're going to have something unique, not just say, hey, we have a new episode and have person's face. This one's kind of funny. It's not the best graphic ever, but it got an incredible amount of engagement. This is from my old show. And this actually had a link to the post. So I had a big LinkedIn no-no that everybody says, but I think this ended up having 100,000 impressions on this post. And I got a ton of more downloads on this episode because of that. And then LinkedIn newsletters. And so actually before I started at Scrappy ABM, I always thought LinkedIn newsletters were lame. I've seen some of the results for our clients and my mind has been completely changed. And so I can't actually read the numbers on here. It's a little fuzzy, but these are all client podcasts that we've worked on and have newsletters for, and they have thousands of people subscribed. And especially the Always On newsletter, they get so many people who actually read and engage with their newsletters. It's kind of crazy. And quick note on that is these are really just taking an outline of the episode, just repurpose that in ChatGPT. Don't get too crazy with it. Go in and do a little bit of editing, but it's just an overview with a link to the episode.
And there's two other things I want to add on this specifically. So some people are thinking, oh, great, I got to go do another newsletter. We have a client that has done lots of tests on this. And what he's found is if you send it through your own newsletter and then separate through a LinkedIn newsletter, there has been zero correlation from a negative impact on this audience if it's sent even to the same exact people for two big reasons. One, your newsletter comes from you and has your design in it. Two, the LinkedIn newsletter comes directly from LinkedIn, looks like a LinkedIn asset, but just happens to also be from your brand. So that's the first thing. Second thing, what we've seen, and you can actually validate with the numbers here, is that roughly 30% of your followers convert into LinkedIn newsletter subscribers. So again, if you've got a decent follower base, this is a way that you can actually beat the algorithm every time, because whenever our LinkedIn newsletter goes live, it sends a notification and it's then also delivered to their inbox. And as a side note, these have 100% deliverability because they come from LinkedIn. So LinkedIn newsletters, ton of huge value. And then what we do for ours is we actually re-release the same content from our own newsletter and the LinkedIn newsletter 3 weeks later, and then have a call to action at the bottom of our LinkedIn newsletters to tell people to go subscribe to our main newsletter, which then drops the day after our LinkedIn newsletters. So like, there's a lot that you can do here. That's not a crazy heavy lift. It's like an extra 15 minutes of work to dramatically expand your reach.
Yeah. And don't underestimate the value of your grassroots promo. So it's easy to just try to do everything digital, but grassroots promo can be extremely valuable. Now, not everybody's going to be on stage at Inbound, but I've seen the stats on Jay's show, Jay Schwedelstein's show that we shared about earlier. And the spike after he spoke at Inbound and shared about his podcast was insane. And it had a huge spike, but then it's sustained at an upward trajectory growth way higher than before he mentioned it on stage. But even if you're not going to be on stage at Inbound, you can talk about it when you go to events, when you're at networking events, talk about it. And that's also another great way to invite people on the show, is you talk about it at a networking event and then you go, hey, would you want to be a guest? And you got an ICP person on your show. So don't overlook talking about this in real world conversations to help promote the show.
Yeah, to make this really tactical for a moment, it's literally a QR code so that people can just scan it. And like, the conversion's really high because they just heard you talk. So your call to action is, hey, do you want to hear me talk more in a podcast? So like, it's a very logical transition for people.
And then the last one, I wouldn't really recommend this for most of the people on here, most likely, but you can do paid promo as well. And so as your podcast grows, you can boost your show through paid promo. And, you know, especially on LinkedIn, you can, if you're able to really clearly target the right people through a sales navigator list, then you can probably target them for paid through LinkedIn. And there's some other platforms and stuff that you can use as well to help promote your show.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what we recommend for promo.
Yeah. So if there's questions on promo or any questions, we're going to breeze through this. We should have about roughly 5 to 10 minutes at the end to answer questions live. So again, go ahead and drop all your questions in the comments. And we're going to talk about how to do the follow-up process. Because again, if you've promoted your show, you've gotten people on it, you're now like, you're 30 episodes in, you've got quite a full pipeline of people. How do you actually make money? First, invite people that look like your best customers. So what we do over here at Scrappy ABM, for those of you that don't know, ABM stands for account-based marketing. So the whole goal is like, who are the best customers we could go after? We do a deep dive on the best customer, typically through the lens of like an LTV to CAC analysis, to understand who are actually our highest profit customers. So it's not just they paid us a boatload of money, but like, they paid us a boatload of money that was highly profitable and everyone was happy. So like, NPS plus profitability is the best customer. So once you've identified who those people are, invite more of them. Then make your guests look awesome. So my first podcast was called The Marketing Ladder. I did 118 episodes. I just asked people how they built their careers. And like, it was all about them. I inserted my opinion 3 times in 118 episodes. Because my goal wasn't to share my opinions. It was to make people look really, really cool. So like, we made a lot of money off of that show that had nothing to do with actually like doing marketing work, but it was more about like how you built a career. It was totally unintentional. Like, I just made people look good because I cared about them. So do that. And the last thing is, once the episode is over, ask them how you can help them. This is a humble stance. It's not a sleazy sales pitch stance. It's like, you just released a great episode that's going to be awesome for our audience. And like, I loved it. And the exact script that I use now, and I shouldn't even call it a script because it makes it sound like it's disingenuous, but I mean this very sincerely. I've done over 200 episodes on the Scrappy ABM podcast. I spend my whole working hours and probably past working hours thinking about account-based marketing. If somebody has shared a tip and an insight that I've never thought of, I know it's really good. And that hopefully doesn't come across as arrogance, but just like, I spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff, like more so than the average person. So if they've said something really cool, I tell them, hey, I've done 200 episodes. Never heard anybody think about it that way. That was amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that insight. So again, they've done you a favor. Now ask them, since you were just so generous and kind with all of your knowledge, is there anything I can do to be helpful for you? This is playing into the law of reciprocity, which is if you offer to be helpful, they will then actually ask you back typically. So here are the three standard things that we see happen. One, they'll say, honestly, I'm good right now. You're like, that's amazing. And then just let them know, hey, this is an open offer at any time. Or sometimes I'll actually say, like, actually, I need your help. Like, I know what to do, but I need more hands and bodies to do it. Can we talk about that? And you're like, awesome. Now you're in the sale. Like, tread lightly and don't like oversell it, but like get a connection call, qualification call, booked. So that's kind of what you do there. Sometimes I'll actually tell you something and say, like, actually, I could really use help with this. Crazy thing. Help them. Like, if you can, do it. So like, this has been the wildest one for me because I've done so many podcast episodes. People are like, I'm really trying to get my brand out there more. Would you be open to helping me land on more shows? And I'm like, yeah. And I send a list of podcasts that I've been on and just say, can I make any introductions? Cost me $0, but it's super helpful for them. And they're like me for it. And now they feel like they owe me one. And again, that sounds odd to verbalize at times, but like, what I have not found is it's been a bad thing for more people that are look like my best fit customers to feel like they owe me a favor. Whether they ever buy from me or not, the fact that they like me, I helped them, they remember me, has always benefited my business over a long enough time horizon. And the last thing here is I would recommend releasing the episode 6 weeks later. The reason is, if you're top of mind until the episode is released, you've now opened a story loop in their mind until the episode has gone live. So they're waiting for the episode to go live. They're waiting for the assets. So they're going to be thinking about you. And over a 6 week time frame, they may bump up against somebody that needs the services that you offer, at which point you get a referral. Like that time delay, what we found is the longer it takes to release the episode, typically the more referrals and opportunities we get because they think about us for a longer time frame. So that's what I would do to actually get meetings booked. All right. So now what? First, drop your questions. Second, you can do three things. So one, think today was a complete waste of time. I'm sorry, but now I know you should never launch a podcast. So I saved you one avenue which you could take. Option two, you can build it on your own. Sounds like John's going to do that. So like high five, John. I can't wait to see your show launch like tomorrow because John's like, I'm going to launch a show tomorrow after this, which is awesome. Like I'm super excited for that. And then the third thing, it's like you can work with us. So again, if you want someone that will guide you through in excruciating levels of detail, everything we just talked about today, and we'll do all your editing and we'll make it to where all you got to do is show up and do a little bit of guest prep. That's what we do for our clients. And they make money. Kyler's here. Kyler will tell you. So if you're going to go on, edit on your own, here are like the five things I do right now. First, pick your podcast. Please do the account-based for all that is good and holy. Please do the account-based podcast. Second, define a success metric up front. It's like, what is the main thing? Is it pipeline? Is it relationships? Is it reach and authority? Like, what's the main goal here? Second, build your guest list. So 10 potential episodes that are either current clients or partners, are industry thought leaders, are in your pipeline, are closed lost. I think about these as like the texting relationships. Like who could I text right now to get on the show? Develop a simple launch plan. So like record the next 3 episodes in the next 30 days so you can actually launch. And then last thing is promote and follow with intent. It's like share the show on LinkedIn and do it over email. And then use every guest appearance as a follow-up touch point. So like once the episode's gone live, say like, hey, your episode went live. Thanks so much for coming on the show. So like, that's that. If you don't want to go at it alone, but you're pretty bought in on this, what I will outline, time still marches forward. But like every month you wait is missed conversations and missed deals. So many agencies are already doing this because they're podcasting with intention and intent. So if you would like to join the agencies that are doing this, that are finding significant success and predictably building pipeline, schedule a call with our team today. From when we kick off, you will have a show launched in 30 days. Cool. So there's your paths. Pick one of these. Let's answer some questions. If you want to book a call, scrappyabm.com/contact. Thank you for being here. And then everybody, please scan that QR code to grab the launch checklist and then book a call. So what questions do we have? I think we answered a lot of them, but yeah. Nathaniel, great question here. Team is pretty lean and we don't have big capacity to work with you guys today. Would you take a show over if we start one and get to a point where we think we are ready to outsource some of this, or do you just do launches? Such a great question. I'll start, Joseph, you finish. I would say 90% of our clients have come to us for launches because admittedly the hardest part is the launch, but we do actually have two or three clients where we have taken over an existing show and picked up the editing and optimized the existing process from start to finish. So again, in short, go for it. Like, you can absolutely launch the show and then come to us to scale it further. But most of our clients come to us to help, for us to help them launch it. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah. I mean, most people really struggle with the launch and procrastination. So my advice to you is keep it as simple as possible. Don't get bogged down in the details. Keep the editing as simple as possible and just launch. Like, put a date on the calendar, invite somebody to come on before you have anything. And that way it just forces you to actually do it. Because like Mason said, he's been doing it for 4 years. I've been doing it for 4 years. And I'm just totally blown away at still the results that I've gotten, Mason and clients that we worked with. It works incredibly well. I think one other thing to think about too with this is, if you're a marketer and you're coming from a marketing background, which both Mason and I are, you have to really switch this to go, this is a business development activity. So you're making a list and you're doing outreach, and then you're following up with those people and you're, you know, trying to see how you can work with them. If you have that approach, this process works super well and it's a way easier way to do outreach. But if you're going, hey, I want to get some inbound, you're way overthinking the content, you're probably not going to get the level of value that we're talking about at your show.
Yeah. And then Kyler said this as a client, which, side note, Kyler, I'll send you money after this because what a great client. He said the most helpful part from a client perspective is that we've done the actual strategy on how to book guests, define the ICP and get everything up and running. And then he just said, by the way, he booked guests 30 and 31 while on this webinar. So in case you're wondering, it works. What a great plant. Didn't mean for that to happen, but I love it. So John had a great question. And Joseph, I actually want to come to you with this one. Is live a bad idea because of the lack of that delay? He's never thought about that before, and he's only done live streamed episodes. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I like live stream just because it keeps it super simple when you're just starting out. So, I mean, it is another route to go where you're going to just launch it as a live show at first and then get into podcast production. The more that you want to get the content value out of it, that's where editing and post-production comes into play. The other thing is you can send the clips to guests for promoting, which is going to help build reputation and everything like that. But I don't think that editing a podcast purely to get that 6-week delay is necessarily worth the squeeze. It's more if you want to get significantly more content value out of the show. I don't know, Mason, if you had a different thought on that.
Yeah. So the Marketing Ladder, which did 118 episodes, was exclusively a live stream show for all recordings. And I did that because I didn't have the time to edit it. So I just made sure it was live because it was easier to edit. And then I'm going to be super clear. That show was terrible from a production perspective. So like, I don't recommend that. But what I ended up doing was I then ripped the audio and then released the actual audio on podcast platforms later. So I actually had still a reason to reach out 4, 5, 6 weeks later because not everybody was on LinkedIn. There's actually many people that listened to the Marketing Ladder that never knew it was a live stream show. They just thought, oh, like I find it on Apple and Spotify. So again, that's where you get into different distribution channels and you have different audiences that respond differently in those places. So that'd be my thought. You can do both and still get the impact for both. Allie, yes, there is a replay. So it'll be live on LinkedIn. If you're watching this, you can just go back and literally restart it as soon as we press end stream. I want to make sure we hit on all these questions. Nathaniel, you asked earlier, how do you balance post-production? Joseph, I'll let you take this because you actually managed the post-production team on our side.
Yeah, I think that with your follow-up question, hopefully I answer this right, but how do you balance the post-production? I mean, for us, it's overall just trying to keep it simple because we're really trying to build relationships with the guests. And so the amount of editing time that goes into making something work at that public figure podcast level, we can do that. And we do that for Mason's podcast now, and we're doing that for Jay's podcast. But the amount of extra editing is a lot. And so I would always just lean towards keeping it simple at first and then making the production better as you start to build an audience. And that becomes more important as you go along. I mean, just basically, we're always going to recommend for smaller agency starting out or in that beginning phase to just keep it as simple as possible because that's how you're actually going to make money through your show.
I love it. All right. If there's no other questions, I'm going to make sure we hit up on all the tech stack side of things, and then we'll go ahead and call it for the day. But as far as like what we use to build lists, once you've actually gotten your ideal client profile, we're using a lot of on SalesNav right now. But again, these are, you just got to have a data source. So like, if you don't find your customers more easily through SalesNav, find a better data source for your use case. We then use Phantom Buster for the outbound side of it to book more of our podcast guests. We're using StreamYard currently, but like we've also used Riverside. Descript has got Descript rooms that you can edit or that you can record in. So like there's lots of recording softwares. We edit in Descript currently, and then we publish through Captivate. And that, those are the kind of the five core technologies of like, how do you build your list? How do you do outreach? How do you record? How do you edit? And how do you host? So all of that combined, Joseph, keep me honest here. I think it's like less than $100 a month from a tech stack perspective. No, I like Phantom Buster is $70 a month. So it's less than $100. So outside of that, like you're paying for editing and strategic thinkers. So hopefully that's a helpful breakdown on the tech side. If there's any other questions, feel free to follow up with us over LinkedIn. Genuinely appreciate all the engagement and the time here. Joseph, any closing thoughts from you?
I just want to see you guys launch podcasts because I've been doing marketing for a long time and this is the most effective way that I've ever seen to actually drive pipeline. So I'm excited to see you guys. And if you decide to do this on your own, please reach out to me and Mason and say, hey, I did it, because I'll cheer you on because we'll kick this stuff off.
Well, we'll actually invite you onto my show. We've had quite a few guests that have like taken all our content and launched their own shows and made a bunch of money. I was like, that's amazing. So like, yeah, if you do it, please tell us and we'll invite you on the show to talk through the story. Again, thank you everyone so much for being here. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one.